Hello, this is Surprised Man Speaks. I'm Peter.
And I'm still Kieran.
And we are collectively Surprised Man. This is a podcast that we do in order to discuss what we've been doing lately and also talk about the Surprised Man game-making activities that we allegedly are involved in occasionally.
Periodically.
Yes.
Infrequently.
So, let's start that. What have you been up to, Kieran?
I was sent to Los Angeles, for business.
Yes.
So I didn't really do any working on these games that we said we were totally going to work on.
Yeah, so we should say that last time we recorded one of these, we were like, okay, we're getting right back into it, full speed ahead, and then Kieran was immediately sent away on business, and so we haven't really made much progress. That said, we've made some progress, certainly.
The closest I got to progress while I was away was adding a new class to the code while sitting, waiting for my plane to depart at LAX, and falling asleep and letting my laptop slowly slide down my legs onto the floor.
Well, maybe we can discuss that a bit more later, because we need to speak first about the games that we've been playing and other stuff that we've been enjoying.
Right.
Oh, do you want to go first?
I haven't really played any games, what with being away on work.
You found time to go to, like, Disneyland and stuff,
well,
didn't you?
Yeah. because shut up, that's why.
Seriously, like, he ends up going to Disneyland on the same weekend. I'm very much not going to the whole Back to the Future Secret Cinema event because they cancelled the whole weekend. So, for those of you that don't know about this, there's a group called Secret Cinema who put on these kind of special screenings of films, and the way that they'll do it is that they'll get a secret location and they'll dress up the set to be like the film in some way, and they'll have some actors around, and it's kind of it's just kind of a fun, different way to watch a film, really. And what they most often do, the way they started anyway, was that they'd just have a secret film, and then if you got a ticket, then they'd announce the sort of dress code and where you needed to show up, and then you'd show up and then you'd be surprised by a film, or it might be obvious from the dress or whatever what you're seeing, basically. So they've done stuff like Blade Runner, Shawshank Redemption that way, and loads of different films. The other thing that they do occasionally is something called Secret Cinema Presents, which is where they announce the film in advance and you can get all hyped up for it. So they announced that they were going to be recreating a big chunk of Hill Valley from Back to the Future within London somewhere. So that was obviously something that I was going to go along to, because I'm a big fan of that film. It's probably my favourite film. So I ordered tickets for it, but in a surprise turn of events, they basically ended up cancelling the first four showings, so I've had to reschedule. And I was a little bit worried at first about this, because in both cases, they cancelled mere hours before people were supposed to show up. And this is a lot of people, like 3,500 people per event showing up, and I was just sort of worried that they just didn't have their act together, and some people were saying that the set looked unfinished, who got a look at the set and stuff like that. So it was a bit weird. It seems like it was mostly to do with the council kind of intervening and saying that certain things about their preparations were not up to scratch, and them having to sort of scrabble around and fix that last minute. That's what it seems like anyway. So since then, it's had one successful weekend, and as far as I can tell, what people have been saying, it's been really good.
Yeah, I've been reading only positive reviews now that they've sort of actually got it going.
Yeah, so I'm really looking forward to it now. I don't know exactly what to expect. I know a couple of things to expect, but it should be interesting. So I'm really looking forward to that. I was momentarily, during the whole mess of it, worried that it was just going to be some guy in a white science wig just shouting, "Marty!" and then vomiting on the floor and falling over before a guy in a bomber jacket drives past in a shopping trolley. that was about the level I was expecting at some point.
Hey, maybe I was unpaid to see that as well.
Yeah.
Maybe not quite as much.
So yeah, it's luckily not going to be like that. It seems it's probably going to be really cool. So looking forward to that.
I'm sure you can tell us all about it next time.
Yes, probably.
Maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe the time after that.
Maybe the time.
Maths is hard. Yeah, so while he was not doing that, I went to Disneyland because I found myself free in LA for a day, and it was very good. I'm not a huge lover of theme parks, but Disneyland is sort of pitched at about the right level for me, where none of the rides are too scary or... I didn't mean scary in the sense that, you'd go on a ghost train and something would pop out and I'd be terrified. I mean, you know, like
you would be that,
motion.
Wouldn't you?
No, fuck off. I mean, in terms of motion sickness. Let's clarify that. I'm not scared by anything at Disneyland except the toilets. Oh yeah. Also, I found out interestingly, if you go to Disneyland on your own, which I was forced to do, like a Billy No Mates, they give you a ticket which lets you skip to the front of all of the rides, which is amazing.
He actually did skip, I hear, as well.
I was won over by the magic of Disney. They let you skip to the front of the rides, which means that you get to go on them much more than people with friends. So I don't know if it's totally worth it. So... games. Oh yes. All right. So I thought I'd talk about a game that I played quite recently, but not in the last couple of weeks, which is Eldritch. I don't think we spoke about it before.
I don't think so. No.
Eldritch greatly annoys me because it's exactly the sort of game I want to have made if I'd thought of it, which I didn't. So, you know, fair play to whoever actually made it. It's a roguelike with Minecraft-style graphics and... It's all procedurally generated, much in the same way as Minecraft.
But it's got a Lovecraft sort of theme to it, doesn't it? So
yes, that's right. Yeah, it really does. I mean, it's totally inspired by Lovecraft. I mean, the hub world where you appear first when the game starts is a library much in the flavour of the sort of Arkham Miskatonic library from Lovecraft's stories, and you find some tomes, like some ancient books in there that will transport you to other worlds, and they're all strongly based, like I think the first one you go to is Dagon the fish god from Shadow over Innsmouth, and so you go to each of these worlds with sort of pleasantly chunky graphics and fight little monsters variously ripped off from the Lovecraft mythos.
Yeah, so it's pretty good. I've played it as well. I don't think I like it quite as much as you do. Maybe it's just because I'm not all that much interested in the Lovecraft stuff. And I don't know. I played through it a few times, got down a few levels, and just sort of... it never really grabbed me in the same way. It's good in that it's basically a kind of an old-school FPS done in a roguelike style, which is something that there hasn't been a whole lot of, so it's definitely got slightly different flavour to other games, other similar games like that. I guess a close comparison would be Spelunky, something like Spelunky, but in...
as an FPS.
But as an FPS, even though it looks more like Minecraft, as you say.
Yeah, something it strongly borrows from Spelunky, I think, is the little shopkeeper aesthetic, because most of the procedural levels will have a little shop somewhere on them where you can buy things guarded by one of the enemies from the game, but you know, in a friendly sort of shopkeeper kind of way. My particular favourite is the one of the lizard men from the Dagon world who gets a little monocle and top hat to show you that he's an okay guy.
Yeah, and there's a way of keeping money between plays, isn't there? Putting it in a bank.
Yeah.
Which you can also sort of rob while you're in it, which is kind of funny. Yeah, I don't want to say too much against it, because it seems very solid, and it's definitely got a very interesting atmosphere. The sound design is very interesting.
I mean, I often play it with my headphones on, and some of the enemies can definitely creep up on you and make you jump, which is surprising. I don't know, I find with some of these games where, you know, graphics aren't really... top notch. I mean, like, there's no Far Cry. That they kind of make up for it
in terms of atmosphere.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is about that as well is that it's not that... I mean, the graphics are good. It's got a very definite visual style.
So yeah.
It's not just thrown together. I think that's the key thing here. It's not... It has a style to it. It doesn't look like it's just been put together in a really lazy way. It looks like they've just gone with this style, which is simple block-based, kind of like Minecraft, but then really committed to that and come up with something that looks really consistent and good, which is what something that I try to do with our projects is to, because I'm not going to be able to produce really detailed graphics, I instead try and figure out a style that's not going to be too difficult for me to produce, but also looks really consistent and interesting. So the way that I've mostly done that in the past is by just using kind of pixel art, which I can do fairly competently. And the way that we're looking to do it with things like Leader of the Starry Skies is that we started looking to the Hexels art program and using that to produce the art. So it's kind of the visuals are a bit more colourful, a bit more high res than what we're used to, but it's still got this very definite stylized sort of look to it.
Yeah, distinct. I do like that all of our things are distinct. Have we told them about Leader of the Starry Skies?
Yeah, we spoke a little bit about it last time.
I can't remember if we gave away the name.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Good. Yeah. I think we were trying to apologise.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, so I've got a game I can talk about.
Yes, do that.
One game that I've been playing quite a lot of lately, and it's one that I think we might have mentioned before because it's kind of related to the wager in some way, but it's Weird Worlds Return to Infinite Space. So I used to play this quite a lot, and it's really the game that gave me an idea of where to take your original idea, Kieran, which was basically, so when we did the game jam for the wager, your initial idea was I think the theme was discovery, so your idea is why don't we just have a bunch of randomly generated islands and you can go around and discover them, which sounds like really it was a good starting point, but there wasn't much to it at that point. It was just okay, so what do we do when we get to the islands, what happens, how do we expand on that concept? So that immediately got me to thinking about this Weird Worlds game where you are an explorer who has been sent out to explore these planets, and so you discover all these planets, and on the planet there might be some friendly aliens, there might be some hostile or kind of neutral aliens, and you also find a load of junk on the islands. So you'll find some, or rather on the planets, so you'll find some item that you can use to upgrade your ship, or you'll find some weird artifact that might be useful later, or it might just be something that you can sell somewhere, and certain events will happen, but kind of more basic than what we had in the wager. Basically, there's objects scattered around these planets and other ships as well, and you just explore around, get the items, and sometimes if you have a certain item, then there's a different outcome to an encounter.
Yeah.
And there's a sort of combat system to it as well if you need to fight other ships. So it's that's what gave us the basic idea of, okay, let's explore these islands, and you find stuff on the islands, and then we expanded that out to, okay, when you encounter events on these islands, you get to choose the outcome, and you might get more options if you've got particular items on you, and just flesh that concept out a little bit.
Hmm.
But as it is, Weird Worlds is actually kind of interesting, and it has one or two things that... we kind of wanted but never really ended up getting into the wager. So one of the neat things it does is about once in every maybe 10 or 15 games that you play, it just has, it puts in a little bit of extra plot over and above you just exploring around the planet. So maybe halfway through, some aliens will come in who you haven't encountered before and start attacking planets from the outside, and you have to try and stop them before they get to your home world. Or maybe there'd be some big sort of mega ship that you need to take care of in the middle of the galaxy. Or maybe in one case, I think lots of stars are going supernova, and you have to try and figure out the the solution to that. So it just keeps you on your toes a bit, because there's always a chance that when you start one of these games, there's something a little more interesting than usual is going to happen during a play. And I would have liked to have got something like that in the wager. So it's got its really nice touches, and it's just got kind of an interesting, funny sort of atmosphere to it. Some of the items that you get are just funny, and the aliens that you encounter have all got kind of distinct personalities, which is nice, and it's well worth a go. It was just available from the website for a while, but quite recently it made it onto Steam. So the other thing about that game is that there was a Kickstarter recently for a sequel to it. So it's actually Weird Worlds 3, because there was a game before this as well. So I've played a little bit of that as well, and it's very, very similar so far. It's just in early access at the moment. It's very, very similar so far to the previous game, to the point that many of the items that you're picking up are exactly the same. The only real difference is that you're now exploring 3D space instead of a 2D plane, and at the moment that's just kind of annoying, I have to say. It's much more difficult to tell where you've been, where you're going, because you're constantly rotating the map around, and it's just a bit difficult to explore in a 3D space. So I hope they find some sort of interface solution for how to deal with that, because at the moment it's just not as relaxing an experience, where you can just see exactly where you've been, exactly where you need to go, and not think about it too much. At the moment you kind of have to rotate around and peer at it closely and think, have I been there already? And it's a bit cumbersome. But I'm sure that they'll figure it out, and it should be great once they're done with it.
Good, good.
Of course, what you just said reminded me of a game I played quite recently called Even the Stars.
So, so Kieran sounded like he was being really on the ball there. However, what just happened, in fact, was that we paused the recording for maybe about 10 or 15 minutes because he couldn't remember the name of the game. So he first tried to look it up on the internet without much success. Then he decided to VPN into work because he thought he might be able to find a Skype conversation that we'd had about it in the past at work at some point. And then finally he looked for the word contemplate, for reasons that will become evident shortly, in Rock Paper Shotgun, which actually enabled him to find the name of the game. So, yes, I'm at the edge of my tether.
End,
whatever.
Thank you for pointing out at length. I don't remember things. So Even Stars. I played this for a little while, which is good because I don't think it's really finished. But it's this little Unity web game where you have a little spaceship, like a 3D spaceship on the screen, and you type commands in. So you can type warp, and then you enter 3 2-digit numbers, and your ship will warp to a new place in the galaxy, and there'll be a planet there, and you can land and explore the planet, and you can generally you find an artifact, and you can stay or leave or contemplate the artifact. And it took so long to look it up, I can't remember the point I'm making, but it seemed fun.
Cool. That was certainly worth the 15 minutes that we spent looking for the name of that game. Thank you, Kieran.
Even the Stars. Look it up, play it, and send us an email and let us know whether you thought it was worth spending 15 minutes looking up the name of it.
Yeah. Still, I mean, don't send us too many messages. I mean, we got inundated with emails last time, and cool. It'll take us several podcasts to get through them all. That's not true. We didn't get any emails.
Why don't you love us? Why don't you email us?
I want to talk a little bit about a game that I also haven't played very recently, but it's something that I played a lot at the time, and I don't think I've talked about it on this podcast yet. So it's a game called Risk of Rain. So like many of the games we've been playing recently, it's got this kind of permadeath element. If you die, you start again from the very beginning.
Like Eldritch. I don't think we mentioned that for Eldritch. But...
So yes, this one works a little bit more like the mechanics of Binding of Isaac, where there is permadeath, but as you go along, you unlock more different types of weapons and power-ups and things, and those can then be discovered in future playthroughs. So you end up being able to get more powerful than you originally could have been when you first played the game, but you always start just as weak as you start usually. Also, you unlock different characters as well, so you can start with a character that has a completely different set of skills, and they're quite diverse in how that works. So it's a side-scrolling sort of shooty game. You're quite a small sprite on the screen, so you're viewing things from quite a long way out, and it's just very fun. It's got a great soundtrack, the visuals are nice to look at, and it's got a really good feeling of progression as you get more powerful, where you start being quite weak and having to be really careful about what's attacking you, and you eventually get to the point where you're just, every time that you press the trigger, just things are dying everywhere around you and exploding, and it's very good at making you feel powerful. And I like that game a lot, so I wanted to give it a mention, even though I haven't played it very, very recently. It's well worth a go. I put hours and hours into it.
I haven't actually played it myself, but I'll be sure to give it a go at some point.
Yeah, and the other nice thing about it, actually, is that there is an end to it, so it's not just kind of an end. I mean, I know there's an end to a lot of these games, but I wasn't sure. But there is an end to it, and it's quite achievable as well. I didn't think I would get anywhere close to ending it when I first started playing, but as I started unlocking more power-ups and things, and found a character that I really got on with using,
right,
I got to the end, that I've since finished it quite a few times with that character. It's really nice. It takes maybe about an hour to go through the game from start to finish if you're going to win it, and it's just an hour of slowly intensifying action. It's just very satisfying.
It definitely sounds worth a play.
Yeah. Anything else on your list?
I thought I'd talk about a book. I thought I'd mention it because I'm rereading it, even though I've already read it twice already, and it's Blind Sight by Peter Watts. And it came out in 2006, and it's a story about the crew of a spaceship who go and explore an alien artifact that's found in just outside of Earth's solar system. And what really interests me about it is they deal with a lot of the problems that would really be faced by people contacting an alien civilization for the first time. As the name sort of suggests, well, blindsight is a very rare medical condition, which you could look up on Wikipedia for a better explanation than I can give you. Not really spoilery, but a lot of the characters are exposed to intense magnetic fields at one point, and they all start developing very interesting but very real neurological disorders. Like short-term ones, and through those the author kind of explores how the brain works. There's also a particularly good example of Searle's Chinese Room refutation of Alan Turing's Turing test, given a sort of a real-world example, which I really, really like.
It sounds interesting. It sounds like the sort of thing that would interest me as well.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to force you to read it at the moment.
Yeah,
yeah,
that is true.
You should.
You do keep bringing it up.
You should. So I can tell you about that Chinese Room thing.
All right, then I'll read it soon. I'm not reading anything at the moment, so I can probably start reading it. So the only other thing. Are you done with Blind Sight, by the way?
Yes, except for a recommendation. Go and read it. It's really good.
So the only other thing that I would bring up at the moment is a little thing that you can interact with on the web. It's not really a game. It's just sort of a thing at the moment.
Are you talking about Twitter?
No. I'm talking about Nested.
Yes.
Basically a procedurally generated everything simulator. So it's just a list. It's just like a tree. So you start off with the multiverse and you expand that tree into different universes. And then that expands into galaxies and then into star clusters and stars of various types and planets, and inside the planets, depending on the type of planet it is, you'll find various different things. If it's a planet with life on, you'll find all the animals on the planets, and you'll be able to expand those further to the different parts of the animals, and then down into the individual cells in the animals, and maybe down to the atoms and subatomic particles, and then
some interesting things happen after that. It's all just text, obviously.
Yeah.
And it's quite interesting that some of the planets that you encounter will also be inhabited, so they'll have continents in them, and they'll have people, and if you expand on the people, they might also have a collection of thoughts and memories that you can explore and stuff like that. So it's... obviously, it's not... There are limitations to the detail because... it's just an experiment in this procedural generation of stuff, but it's just there's something very compelling about it. Certainly from our perspective, as well as we are interested in lots of kind of random generation style things in the games that we make. Just the idea that you can explore these little areas that are generated randomly, but you can explore them at any level of depth, and certain things will tell a story if you've got a bit of an imagination to give it that. So I think you can just search for nested in Google, and it will appear fairly high up the list. And it's just quite interesting. It's just something that I like to think about when designing games. Anyway,
it's made by Autile, which is probably not how you say that. It's Autay. I don't know. Who also made Cookie Clicker. Have you played Cookie Clicker?
I haven't, but I know the idea well enough to understand what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think I would like Cookie Clicker, but then I became hopelessly addicted to it for a little while. And it's oddly addicting for a game where all you're doing effectively is clicking to make cookies. If you haven't played Cookie Clicker, check that out. It's not really a game. Do we do this? I mean, what is a game? What would Wittgenstein say?
Well, I mean, he'd really say that you don't really pin down game with a definition. You don't really need a working definition of game to understand what a game is, but rather we can talk about it without having a working definition, because it kind of...
They're in a family.
We know what games are, and it has kind of family resemblances with other game-like things, and we know a game when we talk about one without having to pin down very exactly what a game is. We don't need to have thought about whether a game has to have victory conditions or rules in order to understand what a game is. Much in the same way that we don't really need to understand exactly how you define what, say, a table is before being able to recognise one when you see one.
I agree.
So that's more or less what Wittgenstein would say on the nature of definitions and meaning.
Sorry, there was a digression there. What were we talking about?
I think we were talking about language philosophy. from the very start, actually, of this podcast, as far as I recall, anyway. yes. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that Cookie Clicker is a game.
It is a game,
Yeah, it's a game. It's a game. It's not anything else, anyway. So, so yeah, check it out.
So this is where we do the second part of the podcast.
Yes. So this is where we talk about what we're doing with Surprise Man, but as we've already mentioned, we sort of haven't been able to do anything because of Kieran's absence, apart from a few little bits and pieces for Fix Fix Bang Bang. As it turns out, you may be going away again soon.
Yes, I got the news that I may be flying to LA in 2 days, so
in readiness for that, I think we're just going to have a little chat about what we can possibly do for Fix Fix Bang Bang while we're not in the same room.
Yeah, that doesn't involve intense cooperation.
Yeah.
One of the things I've been wanting to work on for some time, but I realised that now that I probably should put it off until the game is at least 99% finished, is the AI for the practice mode that the game's going to have. So it'll be for when you don't have a friend to spare, so you want to practice on your own. So you can either pick the engineer or the pilot, and the computer will play the other one.
Yeah, so it's essentially it's single player mode, but we really don't want to give the impression that it's a
single player game.
It's a single player game, so we don't really want to call it single player mode.
Yeah,
so it's practice mode, basically.
Yeah.
Since
ideally the way that you play this game is with a friend shouting at each other in the same room, and that's how we want it to be. So, but yeah, we do also do want people to be able to just have a go at the game and see how they get on, or in the comfort of their own time.
Yeah, or to practice some of the more tricky things ahead of time.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I've just been interested in writing AI for a shmup because, I mean, obviously the AI for the engineer is simpler. I mean, you just have to produce a list of priorities of what needs to be repaired and tie that together with pathfinding.
Yeah.
But AI for the shmup, I apologise, but I can't remember who actually gave me the idea of what you're supposed to do, but a good solution is to produce like a heat map of the playing field in terms of what's going to be the most dangerous place to be in a few ticks. So, and then the pilot is programmed to head towards nearby areas where the, you know, up and coming damage is the least.
Right.
While also you can have an overlay on top of that of pilot priority. So you could say, so you're effectively saying, look at the heat map, try and stay in areas which are low risk, but go up to medium risk if you can retrieve a part for a power up, say, or something, or you know, engage an enemy with fire if you're not immediately putting yourself in extreme danger.
Yeah, and we'll probably tune that risk a bit, because one of the things about our game is obviously that in quite a lot of these shoot 'em ups,
you don't want to be injured at all.
Yeah, you don't want to be injured at all. In this one, you can take a few hits, and you're expected to take a few hits because you've got this guy repairing you as you go. So we're expecting that the pilots can be a bit more risk takers, and that the amount of stuff being flung at you, especially by the end of the game, is going to be higher than usual. We spoke a bit about this last time. That difficulty fine tuning is going to be a tricky thing to get right, because I watch people play these insane bullet hell shooters and get through without a scratch.
People like John from Roll 7 Games.
Yeah, that person who definitely has a name.
Yeah, I forgot his name during our last podcast, and I'm sorry.
Yeah, he was just someone else in the last podcast.
we've given him a real name and identity now.
So yeah, these people that play real kind of bullet hell shooters, I wonder, do we fine-tune it so that they would find it difficult to get through? Do we make it so that it is in fact impossible to avoid getting hit sometimes? And I'm not sure really what the answer to that, as we tune the difficulty, is going to be, because it feels, even though you've got a guy repairing stuff for you, it still feels like a little bit cheaty just to make it so that they have to get hurt at some point.
Yeah,
it feels like,
I know what you mean.
It feels like a really skilled pilot should be able to avoid that at least most of the time.
And of course, the problem with doing that is that the other player has nothing to do.
I mean, there are things that they can do.
Yes, of course.
There's the building of the power-ups, which is always going to be a thing. Some of the components do just naturally degrade.
Mm.
So, and one of the balancing elements to it is that is weapon overheating, of course. So if you want to fire in a sustained way in the game, your weapons are going to overheat and they're going to need repairing. So the game immediately gets harder if you're trying to conserve your fire in order to stop weapons damage happening, which means that that problem should partially sort itself out.
Yeah. But balance is going to be a long process, I think.
Yeah. So there are things that we've done, we've kind of thought about for how to balance that. But what can we do? Let's get back to talking about what we can do reasonably in the next couple of weeks. So I think
so we talked about the tech tree for the power-ups, where they're only going to be revealed to the player in a certain order, so you can't just skip to the end of the queue, for example, and get the most powerful versions of power-ups straight away.
Yeah, so particularly the weapons in this case.
Yes, yes.
So we've got a few different types of weapons, and most of those have been put in the game so far. Most of the kind of regular pulse
shooty weapons are in the game. We need to maybe come up with a couple of different versions of the beam weapon and the missiles that are also in the game. So we'll need to design those, but to get the general principle of the progression, I think can be done, can't it?
Yeah. I did have an idea for a weapon based off that new beam we added for the new boss. It was for the second boss.
Right.
Yeah. Who has that sort of thin beam that appears and then fires.
Yeah.
I was suggesting maybe we could have something similar to that, but you fire like a little pod thing out that's like a little satellite craft, and that fires the beam and then is destroyed, rather than you having access to that sort of, because the beam has a second charge and then to fire. But it's very, very powerful, so
yeah, it would be interesting to see how that works, because it doesn't quite have that immediacy that you expect to have from a weapon that you're firing.
Yes.
But it's good to have different options, but I think what we need to do is figure out mainly how are we going to enhance the existing weapons, and how do you advance on the sort of beam weapon that we've got already? That because we've got all of these weapons now have an overdrive mode, so that when you're fixing the weapon while it's already at 100% health, it goes into a kind of super mode. So the beam weapon will start going punching through multiple enemies at once and stuff like that, and pulse weapons, they'll just go faster and things like that.
Do more damage.
And the missile weapons are a very cool one, where they start developing a homing capacity.
That is very cool. I really like it when it gets to that point.
Yeah. So we just really need to figure out how to advance on those. So the missile one, I mean, it seems like you could easily enough just have, like, double missiles, and then, you don't want to get too crazy with those, because they are quite powerful.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are things that you can do with those that would be good. Maybe you could just have missiles that do more damage as well. Double missiles and then double missiles, but with a bigger radius of damage or something like that.
The idea of missile swarm pops into my head. So you fire something that's one large missile that breaks apart into lots and lots of tiny missiles that don't really do a lot of damage, but are homing. So you fire one thing.
Sort of cluster
bomb
thing. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I like that a lot. So we could do something like that. So there's definite ideas for how we do that. I'm not sure about what we do about the beam weapon. Because that,
I mean, maybe there is no upgraded version. Maybe it sits at the top of its, maybe there's the beam weapon and a broader beam, which encompasses more things.
Or maybe it's just straight power upgrades.
Yeah. More damage.
I want some way of visualising that on the screen, though, I think, as well, just to show you that you're using a more powerful weapon. I'm not sure exactly what that would look like, though.
Sparkles.
Yeah, we'd do add some visual fanciness to them. I'm sure we could figure it out. We're gonna have some sort of tree progression for that, which should spice things up a bit. And I'm currently thinking about as well just switching weapons, how that works. So is it that you switch weapons by upgrading to it? So you'd have to redo the upgrade to switch back to a different weapon type.
Which is how it works at the moment.
Or is it that you'd have the capacity somewhere to switch back and forth between weapons that you've already acquired? And I quite like that idea, because there are different situations where different weapons might be useful, but I'm just not sure how to do it at the moment.
Yeah, so I mean, the most conventional way of doing it would be, of course, to just give the pilot a button that switches between weapons when thing. But one of the interesting ideas I think you had was having it be a switch or a button somewhere in the ship that the engineer has to go and press to change weapons for the player.
Yeah, I do like it. The only trouble I have with it is that I envisage the situation
where the pilot just feels like he really wants to switch to the beam weapon because that would be really useful for getting rid of this enemy. And by the time you've lumbered all the way over there and flicked the switch, it's too late. the moment has passed.
It's exactly my concern as well.
So I'm just not sure how well it would work in practice, even though it goes very nicely with our efforts that we've been making to make the interaction between the two players as kind of give that as much as possible.
We can always review it later, I guess.
Yeah. So I do like the idea of switching weapons, though, so I feel like there should maybe at least be a button that you can press to switch between them. I mean, there sort of is a button at the moment, but it's a debug button. So we'll probably need something, some sort of thing on the screen somewhere that shows you what weapon you've currently got selected or something.
Well, I don't know. At the moment, I'm imagining that maybe when you change weapons, the icon for the one that you've freshly selected just appears in the pilot area of the screen for a second and then goes away. I mean, because one of the problems we have with adding stuff to the UI is that we're already quite information rich on what's on the screen, so yeah. I'm worried there isn't much space for more permanent UI fixtures.
Yeah, we don't want to get this too cluttered. We need to start thinking about making it simple as possible.
Yeah, I don't think anyone will have trouble remembering what weapon they've got currently selected if they have. They can just fire it.
Maybe it's just something that's not needed. It just seems like something that is in games that you have this little what weapon you've got selected icon. Maybe that's the only reason why I'm thinking it's necessary. But yeah, that's something that can be addressed, I think, without me being there.
Yeah.
Because we know pretty much what we're going to get out of the tree at the moment. It's just adding in that functionality.
So there's no sort of visual representation of this power-up tree. It's just an in-memory list of unlocks. So you at the beginning of the game, you only have access to the single pulse weapon at the start of the game?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And then anything else so the things which might be available to you then I can't remember the exact order, but then you can unlock like the double pulse guns.
So I think the first weapon upgrade you can unlock is always the double pulse guns. But then from the double pulse guns, you can branch out to the beam weapon and maybe the missile weapon, or you can upgrade to the even better spread pulse guns. Mm. And we're talking about maybe having a between one as well, between those two, because it's quite an upgrade from double pulse to spread at the moment.
Yeah, so what were you thinking for? I can't remember now.
Yeah, I think we were thinking maybe going from double to either triple or quadruple and then to the... Is it five?
The spread gun is five.
Yeah, the five on the spread gun. So that should be fun. And maybe there can be a very difficult to unlock power-up that we can add in at some point that is basically changes it so that you're firing all guns at once that you own. So you're firing the beam and you're firing the missiles and the pulse guns at the same time. Whatever you've got, it's firing. But it would have to be quite tricky, difficult to build, yeah.
I want to add that as a debug feature now.
Just fire everything.
Fire all weapons!
Yeah. So there's that. There are a couple of enemies that we've got planned at the moment, aren't there? So there's... we're starting to get to the point where... Because there are two enemy factions in the game, and we're starting to get to the point where we've pretty much added all of the enemies that we want to add for the first faction, and we're starting to add some for the second faction. So we've got a bomb at the moment.
Yeah, I put a GIF of that online.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And you've had an idea of a sort of enemy that has two segments on each side of the screen, and there's a sort of big kind of electrical field that is generated between those two things, so that if you're caught between them, then you get hurt. Mm. So we've got that to build.
That was actually what I was working on last of all. I think there's some progress made towards it.
Yes, and we've been talking about having enemies which are just sort of larger on the screen, so they're big ships that come down and they've got various mounted guns and things on them, and when you destroy the guns, then that destroys the whole thing. So there's going to be some sort of capital ship style enemies that start coming in towards the end of the game as well.
So
loads of enemies to start getting on with, and I think that you know, we've got some graphics for the enemy that we just talked about with the electrical field in between that you can probably start doing something with.
Yeah.
So those are some things to be getting on with, I think, while you're possibly gone. Are you definitely gone yet, or do you know?
It's currently at possibly.
Right, okay.
I haven't heard anything more, but they usually tend to give me about a day's notice.
So. Right. There's all of that. We still have two bosses to make, or rather it's kind of one boss, one traditional boss, and one weird mini level, I guess, that we're making. So there's that. I have started making some new music for Fix Fix Bang Bang, because why not? I've pretty much made all of the music for the game, but I just had recently an idea for another piece of music that I could put in the game. I'm not exactly sure where it's going to live at the moment. It might end up being boss music, because at the moment my first and second boss music are the same, which is fine. I was okay with that, but I thought it might be nice just to have different music for each of the bosses. Or it might go somewhere else. I haven't quite decided yet. But it's definitely kind of got a Fix Fix Bang Bang flavour, this piece that I'm coming up with. So it'll probably end up in the game somewhere.
We'll find somewhere.
Yeah, so we'll see about that.
Maybe in a cutscene.
Maybe so. So those are all our Fix Fix Bang Bang things. We've also had a little bit of a conversation about some of the things that we're planning for Leader of the Starry Skies.
Yeah.
So I've really been thinking about how to make it so that it's not just kind of boring stats, so that you're not just looking at graphs and things when you look at the players, and rather thinking about ways. When you look at the characters, and we're thinking about ways that we can make them just seem a bit more human. And a board game that I recently got, which I haven't had a chance to play yet, but I'm very familiar with the rules after going through them in some detail, is Tales of the Arabian Nights. So in this game, you each play a character from the Tales of the Arabian Nights, and you like Aladdin and Simba, Bad and that sort of thing.
And Simba,
yeah, from all characters from all the Disney classics. You go around and basically encounter events very much like you would in, say, The Wager or something like that.
Can we sue?
I don't think we can. No, it came out way before. Right. Yeah. But the way that you resolve those events is based on a couple of things. It might be based on particular skill that you have. So you've either got the skill or you don't. It might be seafaring, or it might be just something quite vague like cunning or something like that. But you also have there's a plethora of statuses that you might have, which are just things that have happened to you that affect what you're able to do. It's usually something negative, like you might be lost or insane or whatever it is. And I think if you're insane, then that means that another player has to pick what you do instead of you, and stuff like that. And it made me think, well, that's a much more kind of flavorful way of presenting the characters than just having a set of five different stats and having those on a scale. So it would be kind of cool if we just came up with 15-20 different skills and just awarded those skills to characters as they get involved in events, and just had it so that if they have certain skills, that means more options are available to them during certain events. And the statuses that they're under might affect the outcome of the events as well. So, yeah, I'm having a little bit of a rethink about how we might approach that at the moment.
Yeah, you spoke to me about that earlier, and I find the idea interesting, because it makes it seem more like how a traditional RPG would play, where you you accumulate points in your across 20 odd skills and you know, but really pared down to D do you have it or do you not? You
know? Yeah, I think in Tales of the Arabian Nights, you either have it or you have it at the master level. That has a specific meaning in the board game, but I kind of think that that's an okay idea to have it at maybe a couple of levels, but not like on a big sliding scale. So again, you're kind of looking at a chart for the character. It's just you open up the character and you can see, oh, they are good at hacking, and they are good at diplomacy, and they are good at sarcasm. I really want to have sarcasm as a skill in the game. That just tells you a bit more about who the character is. It's then, you know, they've got intelligence at 15, four, and stuff like that.
I definitely know what you mean.
So it's really made me revisit how we might approach that, and in some ways it will be more difficult to write because I have to make sure that all of these different skills are used in all of the different events. But in some ways it's easier as well because I don't need to think about stuff like
percentage.
If intelligence is more than 3, then they have this option or they automatically fail or whatever it happens to be. It's just very simple. Do they have this skill? If so, then this option is available to them. Do they have this status? If so, then the plot, the story for this event moves in a slightly different direction, and all of that sort of thing. So I'm very interested in seeing what that will do to the writing, but that's a way off because, as we say, our focus for the moment is fix, bang, bang.
Gotta get that game finished.
Yes, and we will. So we've got a plan for how we're going to how approach that, despite the fact that Kieran just seems to be constantly in LA at the moment. So we'll keep on plugging away at it and update you on our progress soon.
We will.
So I think that's about all we've got to talk about.
Yeah. I guess we should drop in the usual reminder that if you're feeling confused or embarrassed by the changes your body's going through, you should send us an email at podcast@surprisedman.co.uk or podcasts@surprisedman.co.uk. I don't know why I bother pointing out that there's both, because no one emails us.
And we've only got one podcast anyway, so...
Yeah, well... I see. I was thinking we do have one podcast, but it has multiple episodes.
Yeah.
What would Wittgenstein think about that?
He probably wouldn't.
Yeah, it doesn't have many opinions on podcasts.
Yeah, he wasn't a big. He wasn't so big on the internet. Wittgenstein.
All right. Well, consider sending us an email and then choose not to, as usual.
If you have any opinions on the philosophy of language, how meaning is derived from either from our use of words or from some sort of real thing in the universe, please think about your life. That's not fair. I think about that stuff quite a lot.
Yes, too much.
please do get in touch, and we'll attempt to have a thorough discussion about those topics next time.
Yes, send us an email, or do it. What's your problem?
Bye.
Bye.